to be of benefit to us. I think that in describing the Yukon situation with respect to the question of negotiations, it should be pointed out at the outset that we do not enjoy the situation of the Aboriginal people in the Northwest Territories, inasmuch as that we are not the majority of the population. Depending on your definition of what constitutes citizenship, we are anywhere from 30% of the present population to, in our opinion, 75% of the permanent population. And so we don't have at our disposal the kind of political leverage that is exercised in Northwest Territories. And as you will see in terms of discussions of the agreements and principles that we've signed to date, those agreements reflect that political reality. The particular points of history that relate to the Yukon claim are that the claim was formally adopted in 1973. Prior to 1973, it was Canadian government policy that Aboriginal rights did not really exist in the country. Following the Calder case, which involved the Nisga'a people from the Nass Valley, government changed their mind and instituted a process of negotiations to specifically define what Aboriginal rights really were and what they looked like. In 1973, our people presented to the federal government of Canada a position paper called Together Today for Our Children Tomorrow. That document formed the basis of which we wanted to proceed with negotiations with the federal government. Negotiations have been going on since that time. For many reasons, and we don't have the time to elaborate specifically, they had never concluded to either an agreement, in full agreement in principle, or obviously following to a final agreement in principle. And it's also, I think, beneficial to understand the political situation in Canada. It is very much different from the political situation in the United States. I don't profess any great knowledge as to the intricate historical relationships between Aboriginal peoples in the United States and the governments of the United States, but at the present time in Canada, we have a clear constitutional expression of the protection of Aboriginal rights. We've just gone through the onerous and difficult process of patriating our Constitution, and that Constitution clearly states that Aboriginal rights are recognized and affirmed. Furthermore, there is a section in the Constitution that provides for the protection of any negotiated agreements between Aboriginal peoples and our federal government. At this time, we are in a process of reaching an agreement in principle. The way the system works is that you take issues such as wildlife and put it on the table, you negotiate it to a satisfactory point, you call it an agreement in principle, you set it aside, you move on until you've covered all the areas that you wish to negotiate on, and then you package it, you call it an overall comprehensive agreement in principle. Then the people in the communities, the federal government represented by cabinet, must give, affix their position, and they must ratify those agreements. After you've gotten that mandate, you move on to a final agreement negotiations, and then you move on finally to legislation from the House of Commons. We are at the point of having concluded negotiations with respect to most all of the areas that we agreed to talk about, and so we have an excess of 73 sub-agreements. They are now at the ratification process. The ratification process, as agreed to in Yukon, was that 10 out of our 12 communities must ratify the agreement for it to be construed as an agreement in principle agreed to by all Yukon Aboriginal people. So far, only 8 or 9 communities have voted. 8 have voted in favor. 1 has turned down the agreement. The other 3 communities have said that there are certain issues that must be clarified prior to moving on. So, and for all intents and purposes, the ratification process is stalled. And I think it's important to the discussions here to indicate what the specific areas of concerns are. And the concerns were expressed by the communities by way of a vote in our assembly in Tagish. And they passed a resolution that effectively called for changes to the agreement in principle. There were 7 points, one being general and overall. And the first point that was contained in the resolution is that Aboriginal title not be extinguished. That number two, that subsistence hunting must be recognized and protected. Three, that land selection or reselection be based on need and not on a quantum basis. Four, that there be Indian control, not fee simple ownership over lands selected by Indian people as settlement lands. Five, that there be full and proper recognition of those of our people who are classified as non-status Indian people. And six, that the bands and band authorities must be fully recognized and strengthened. That was passed in Tagish, and what is occurring now internally within our communities is a process to flesh out what these general concepts mean when you look at them as negotiating positions. Workshops are being conducted, intercommunity meetings, and hopefully what will happen is that all the communities will firm up their position, and when we get back after this week and after a drive back down the highway, we will begin 10 days of meetings between ourselves to finally determine a negotiating position to take to the new government of Canada based on these particular points as expressed by the resolution passed in Tagish. I think prior just to Victor starting to talk in very specific terms as to the agreements, I think in terms of the question as to how will we move on into the future has been very clearly demonstrated over the last couple of days. I think that the answer from our perspective is for Aboriginal people to move on these questions themselves internally and to assert their rightful place in terms of management over the resource. That has been our responsibility for thousands of years. They've been impinged upon by various governments, regulatory agencies, and I think that what we're seeing in terms of the efforts of the Eskimo Walrus Commission, the Whaling Commission, the Porcupine Caribou Herd discussions, is a reassertion of that responsibility, the acknowledgement of that responsibility. And I think that clearly is the direction in which we will be moving to proceed in the future. It's going to not happen overnight. There's going to be a lot of development before we are totally satisfied. I think we only will be totally satisfied when we have a form of legislative jurisdiction with respect to the management of our resources. And furthermore, just as an aside, a very important aside, in Yellowknife this summer, there was an international conference of Indigenous people convened clearly on the question of cultural survival of Indigenous people. And as a part of that process, there was an international committee formed called Indigenous Survival International that is mandated to deal with a lot of the issues we're talking about here. It's composed of 2 members from Greenland, 2 from Canada, and 2 from Alaska. This committee basically has a responsibility to go out into the world and to give expression to support of the subsistence culture of our people. So I think that in many respects we are clearly demonstrating how we are going to survive and how we are going to protect our cultures. And with those opening remarks, I'd like to... Okay, I'll quit. turn this over to Victor Matander, who's been very much involved in many of the issues we've been talking about. He's been a negotiator for many years with the Council for Yukon Indians, and he can very clearly describe in more detail the agreements that we've reached to date that relate to wildlife.
Thank you very much. Basically, what I'll do is I'll start in three areas: fishing, hunting, and trapping. Just to give you some background on how negotiations took place on that, the federal government is the main body that we negotiate with. The Yukon Territorial Government forms part of the federal team. Under the Yukon Act that the Yukon government operates under, they have certain jurisdictions responsible for hunting and trapping. And when it came to that, as what was said earlier, we was one of the first topics that we wanted to negotiate out was the whole harvesting area. As a result of hard negotiations for about a year and a half, we finally arrived at a harvesting agreement. After many, many drafts, we did arrive at agreement, and as a result, there is still a number of concerns being expressed by our people in the communities on the harvesting area. So what I'll do is I'll express the objectives of the fishing agreement first, and that is to first grant and protect in perpetuity certain hunting or fishing rights of our people. Secondly, to establish a system of allocation of salmon and other species fish in the Yukon, to improve protection and management of fish in the Yukon, an attempt to increase those fisheries enhancement of the levels of fish stocks in Yukon, to establish a fair and equitable limited entry system with a view to increasing participation of of our people in commercial fisheries. Also to respect the non-Indian two-sport domestic and commercial fishing, and to involve our people in the planning and development of fisheries policy in Yukon, and that would be designed for Yukon conditions itself. In exchange for the guarantees, our people have agreed to accept the government's claim that it has the final responsibility in managing of Yukon's fish. Our people have agreed to accept these guarantees in exchange for any rights of ownership that we might have over Yukon's fish. The agreement sets out three types of fishing: food fishing, Indian food fishing, commercial, sport, and domestic. Although our people are not given special rights to sport fishing, they do have the same rights as anyone else. We will be given preference in commercial sport fishing enterprises. About a quarter of all commercial fishing licenses south of 65 latitude north are guaranteed to our people. All new commercial fishing licenses for the Porcupine drainage system are guaranteed to the residents of that area, basically the Old Crow area itself. Our people have been given special rights to fish for food. These rights include the use of traditional fishing methods, exclusive use of certain traditional fishing sites is given, and Indian salmon food fisheries may only be located in these areas. The right to a proportion of the Yukon's total allowable fish catch has been guaranteed to our people. Whenever fish are in short supply, commercial fishing limits will be the first ones to be reduced. Although the agreement deals specifically or separately with salmon fishing and fishing for other types of fish, the rules for both types of fish are similar. If food fish populations are reduced as a result of major industrial and or government actions such as hydro projects, compensation would be considered. The manner in which compensation would be made to our people would be laid out in the final agreement. In terms of fish management, the Central Indian Authority would be consulted by the government on setting of fish limits that will be involved in all programs to improve fishing in Yukon. Canada and the Council for Yukon Indians have also agreed to set up a committee to design a general fishing policy. So basically, that is the fishing agreement itself. If there's more specific questions on that, I'd be pleased to answer that later on. The second is the...
Just before you move on, Victor, you said you were guaranteed a certain proportion of the Yukon beneficiary. Are you able to elaborate on that?
The guarantee would be based on each of the different river systems that we have. For instance, in the Porcupine River in North Yukon, Old Crow would, the people of Old Crow would pretty well control about 90 to 95% of the fish in that river system. In other rivers or streams south of that, the proportion would come down somewhat based on the proportion of Indian, non-Indian in that area. Again, those are guaranteed in perpetuity or based on conservation.
And those guarantees are in the agreement?
That's right.
Sorry, go ahead.
Hunting, what we did there, in terms of the objectives, was to grant and protect in perpetuity certain harvesting rights of our people, to establish a system of allocation for moose, caribou, and sheep in the Yukon, to provide for the protection, conservation, and effective management of wildlife in Yukon, to relate wildlife management to habitat management, to provide for our people with meaningful participation with government in wildlife management, and to provide for a transition from the wildlife harvesting regime to the managed wildlife harvest. The hunting rights of our people will replace existing rights under subsection 17.3 of the Yukon Act. That section speaks that status Indian would have the right to hunt for food on all unoccupied Crown land. That right would be given up in terms of having our people, just to give you some background on that, we have two groups of people, status and non-status. Status Indians that are recognized under the Indian Act, and non-status are people that are not recognized under that. As a result of that, one of the basic objectives under our claim is to have equality amongst our people. And in order to do that with hunting, we had to give up that right. We couldn't negotiate the right of non-status people to have the rights as status Indians would have to hunt. That is one of the big issues in Yukon today. In terms of the wildlife management, the government of Yukon is responsible for wildlife management, and except where the agreement states otherwise, our people are subject to all hunting laws and regulations, including licensing laws. Although our people will be given rights to hunt, they will not own Yukon's wildlife. In terms of the Yukon Wildlife Management Board, this board would be established at the expense of government within 1 year of the final agreement, and would have 50% Indian participation on that management board. It would advise the responsible minister on all matters concerning wildlife protection and management. Most specifically, it will establish all hunting limits for the Yukon and its constitutes regions and people. In carrying out these functions, the board will have the right to all relevant government information and will have the power to order documents and witnesses other than the minister to appear before it. It may hold its meetings in public and will hold public meetings in the Yukon communities to hear the views of local people. The board will have its own secretariat working under its own control. In terms of the game quota, the annual allowable harvest would be set for moose and caribou. Roughly half of these quotas are allowed to our people. For the first 3 years, the Indian quota would be 500 caribou and approximately 1,250 moose. A separate agreement on the porcupine caribou herd is being negotiated out and probably would be finalized probably by the end of the year. Sheep are presently managed on a trophy basis in Yukon. The Yukon Wildlife Management Board will report to the minister on the allocation of sheep trophies between residents and non-resident hunters. The board will also report on whether all or part of the sheep hunt should be allocated to food, and if so, what proportion should be allocated to our people. Because it is recognized that some of our people traditionally hunt sheep for food, the government, the Yukon government, is now exploring ways of utilizing trophy meat for the use of Indians. The Yukon government will be responsible for establishing the quotas on the basis of recommendations from the Yukon Wildlife Management Board. The board will decide upon its recommendations after reviewing information requested of and provided to it by the wildlife branch and the local communities. The agreement does not apply to hunting on the north slope of the Yukon. There's a special, the COPE agreement speaks to that particular area itself, and that was mentioned earlier. Except where they are protected by law, our people may take small game by either traditional or conventional methods. Our people would be entitled to black bears, goats, and grizzly bears on the same basis as other Yukon residents. They may receive special permission from the minister over and above the usual citizen's right to take black bear for food, black bear, grizzly, and goats for ceremonial purposes or religious purposes. Our hunting rights will have, our people would have the exclusive or the sole right to hunt on settlement lands, or they will also share the right with the general population to hunt on unoccupied crown land on which hunting is permitted. If they so wish to do so, our people may apply for a non-Indian hunting license. The number of animals killed under such license would be reduced or deducted from our quota for the following year. In terms of the moose, the annual allowable harvest for the first 3 years following the settlement would be 2,500 moose, of which our people would be guaranteed 50% or 1,250 moose. From these 1,250 moose, our people would be allowed a preferential harvest of 600 moose, which may be taken at times other than the regular season. In other words, the hunting season that we have now starts from August through to September, or end of October. The other 600 moose would be harvested from the end of beginning of November right through till end of August of that following year. However, should our harvest exceed 650 moose during the regular season, the amount of excess of 650 moose would be deducted from the preferential quota, thus maintaining a total allowable harvest of 1,250 moose for Yukon Indians. In the fourth and fifth year, the preferential quota would be established by government in the same manner as the overall quota. Caribou. In the first 3 years following the settlement, the allowable harvest would be 1,000 caribou, of which our people would be guaranteed 50% or 500. Our people would be allowed to take 200 of the 500 caribou allocation outside the normal hunting season, provided that they take in the regular season is 300 caribou or less. In the regular season, harvest of caribou is greater than 300, the preferential harvest of caribou shall be reduced accordingly. The preferential quota during the fourth and fifth year will be established by government in the same manner as the annual allowable harvest. Where such hunting does conflict with the objectives of national parks, our people would have the right to hunt for subsistence within those parks. Such hunting will be made by mutual agreement between our bands and the parks authority, and will apply to any new parks where Indians can establish a customary hunting ground. The Kluane and the Champaign-Ajac band have such a right to hunt in hunt in Kluane National Park now. In territorial game sanctuaries, our people would have the right to participate and obtain the meat from cull of sheep, caribou, and moose in those areas. The boundary of the Kluane game sanctuary will have to be adjusted to allow for group trap lines to be held by the Kluane Tribal Brotherhood in those areas. Presently, those are game sanctuaries, and there is no hunting or trapping allowed in that, but we have negotiated a special group trapping area where the people in Burwash can utilize. The hunting in territorial parks will continue where it is consistent with park use and objectives. Our people may use animals for food and clothing and for barter with other Indians for fish and other animals. They may also legally sell any non-edible byproducts. Our hunting limits will apply to Indians from outside the Yukon who hunt in Yukon. The Central Indian Authority would be responsible for allocating the hunting rights to both Yukon and the non-Yukon bands. The allocation to the non-Yukon bands is to reflect the general levels of hunting, Yukon hunting between 1979 and 80. Presently, there is an agreement in place that speaks to non-Yukon bands, and that agreement, again, has been reappealed or is going to be rejected because it's not acceptable to us or to the other parties that have interest in Yukon. In terms of the migratory birds, Canada has agreed to seek changes in the International Agreement on Migratory Birds. The purpose of these changes is to allow for subsistence hunting of game birds by our people during the closed seasons. The Canadian government has agreed to consult with our people in the development of regulations concerning the subsistence hunting of migratory birds. We also have a section on economic opportunities. The Council for Yukon Indians would be given dollars or funds by Canada or the Government of Canada with which to develop and implement training programs in guiding and outfitting. Our people may also employ other Indians to provide transportation and labor on hunting expeditions. A resource management training program would be initiated for our people by the Yukon Territorial Government to allow for our people to be brought into the management of wildlife within the government. There is also an agreement to consider preferential rights of our people in game outfitting and to discuss the feasibility of involving Indian people in the commercial wildlife farming or ranching. That basically is the wildlife resource harvesting agreement. The next one is the trapping. Basically, the objectives there are to grant and protect in perpetuity certain harvesting rights of our people, to preserve trapping opportunities for qualified non-Indian people in Yukon, to permit our people to allocate and realign trapping privileges in what we call Category 1 trapping areas in accordance under this agreement. And with respect to trapping privileges of all individual trappers in Yukon, to provide a cooperative approach to the management of fur bearers in Yukon, and to provide for the enhancement of trapping opportunities and increasing the productivity of our people's trapping. The agreement guarantees our people the right to hold up to 70% of all trap line areas in Yukon. When the number of Indian trap lines fall below 70%, then they have the right of first refusal on any available trap lines. When the number of Indian trap lines reach 70%, they lose the right of first refusal. The right of first refusal will not apply to trap lines being transferred between members of non-Indian families or those being transferred to non-Indian assistant trappers who have worked on the trap line for 3 years. The trap line designated as Indian trap lines may only be transferred to Indian people. The remaining 30% of trap lines may be held by any qualified person, and these trap lines can be assigned to any other person. Our people there can also hold that 30%. And our people do not, through the enactment of the agreement, acquire ownership of any wildlife, merely the right to use it. As part of the working of our trap line, trappers are entitled to build cabins and to cut necessary trails that's required for their businesses. In terms of the management, although the responsibilities of fur bearers lies with the Yukon Territorial Government, the government has agreed to establish with Indian trappers a consultative procedure on fur management in the future. Where possible, Indian trapping privileges will be allocated according to the former use of individual trappers. Group trap lands may also be allocated. The Yukon government will allot non-Indian trap lands. Our people will be responsible for providing the government with the fur management information required by it, and will allow the government access to their trap lands for purposes associated with the management or good management. Steps will be taken to ensure that trap lines are fully utilized. The government accepts responsibility for continuing research on fur bearers as part of the fur management function. Until the settlement is achieved, the existing 70-30 division between Indian and non-Indian trap lines will be preserved. In other words, the status quo would be followed. In terms of programs under the trapping agreement, Canada would provide funds to our people with which to design and implement programs around trapping. The government will also agree to consider the setting of self-supporting fur floor prices in the Yukon and to adopt a standard of fur grading system. Again, in terms of the non-resident Indian or Métis Aboriginal interests in Yukon, we have a group of people from Fort McPherson who have a group trap line in the northeastern portion of the Yukon called the Fort McPherson Group Trap Line. That is not included in the agreement. It is recognized under the agreement that Fort McPherson would have that right to use that area in the future. So basically, that itself is a general overview on the three agreements that have been negotiated out. Okay, in terms of the one of the other aspects that we negotiated out was the whole aspect of land use planning and environmental assessment. There are basic objectives that would consider our people's interest in hunting, fishing, and trapping. When land use planning is established, hunting, fishing, and trapping rights of our people must be reflected within the planning of that. The settlement lands that we have under the agreement must also be considered under the land use planning. Our people's rights in terms of the socioeconomic and political structures must also be reflected within the overall land use planning. The land use planning agreement basically provides to our people a minimum of 25% participation within any board structures or commissions that are established. In the North Yukon, the planning agreement is somewhat stronger and has 50% participation of our people within the planning process. So that itself is a general overview on the type of things that we have negotiated out, keeping in mind too that a number of our communities have expressed concerns in the whole harvesting area right now. And that's something that will be discussed further next week in terms of developing a mandate or community position or an overall Yukon position that could be presented to government. There is a lot of emphasis to have the hunting or subsistence recognized and protected in the agreement, and that's something that we're going to have to consider.
Right. Thank you, Victor. I take it from all that you say that Canada was prepared to accept the provisions that you've outlined to us, but your ratification procedure requires 10 of 12 villages to vote in support of the agreement, and it's the Indian people who've rejected the agreement.
That's right.
Well, any questions for Dave Porter or Victor? Jim, and then Jim Kowalski, and then Willie Goodman.
Yeah, Vic, you mentioned fisheries rehabilitation. Could you elaborate on that a bit? That is why and where and how?
What we have is, what we want to see happen in Yukon is the enhancement of salmon and fish stocks. And that's something that over the last, 100 years, I suppose, there's been a depletion of fish stocks, particularly salmon. And with the commercial fishing activities that are going on in Yukon, a lot of freshwater stocks are being depleted. And what we're going to do would have to be defined within the final agreement as to how enhancement would be carried out, where, and what initiatives are necessary by our people and by government to carry those objectives forward would have to be defined later on. One of the other things that my colleague just mentioned to me is that salmon is a stock, an international fish. It's just like the caribou, it travels between Alaska and the Yukon. It is something that we're going to have to come to grips with and establish communication and cooperation in terms of how we approach the salmon topic. It is something that we're going to have to deal with. Our people are very concerned about the stocks that are available now. They are depleted. They want to see something put in place, and I think the best way of dealing with that is to start opening a dialogue up with the Alaskan Native people in achieving and developing common positions that we could reflect to the governments that we have to work towards establishing what would be, I guess, an international treaty at some point in time.
So he's saying he's prepared to negotiate.
Willie Goodwin, you better.
Yes, Victor. One of the hottest things that comes up once in a while here in Alaska is harvesting of game for ceremonial purposes. Do you have limitations on harvesting of game for ceremonial purposes in Canada, and how do you propose, or have you had ongoing negotiation with the Canadian government to resolve that problem?
There is recognition under the agreement for the use of game for ceremonial purposes. There will be special provisions so that these kind of activities can continue in the future. Those are things that we still have to work out in terms of the details. Again, those kind of things would have to be worked out towards the final agreement.
I'd just like to
Dave Porter respond
to that and point out that right now, at the present time, there is no restriction on the ability of legally recognized status Indian people to hunt for subsistence anywhere in the Yukon, and that would also involve for religious purposes. But a point of clarification with respect to the aspect of our negotiations and where they sit now, there seemingly is some impression that the agreement in principle, as we talk about it and as are represented by the sub-agreements that have been signed, has been rejected by our people. That hasn't really been a clear-cut decision. You can construe that because they can't come to a ratification vote on the issue, that in its way means that the agreements have been rejected. But it's rather a situation where the agreements have been reviewed, they've not been approved, and there has been put in place some recommended changes that should occur to those agreements prior to moving on to a further ratification process. So you should clearly understand that next week when we sit down on the 17th, that is the intent of those meetings, is to discuss the current agreements and principles with the suggested six changes and to come forward with new negotiating positions reflective of those six issues and to go back to the table with the Government of Canada.
Caleb Pingawi.
Yes. Maybe one question to Victor, but a supporting statement to Dave Porter. And that is, I think it's true of what has been said over the past 2 days in regards to the Native position on various things. And one is that they put, and it came up when what Mr. Porter was saying, and that is that The people, the native people, are really concerned about the protection of the resources and the habitat that they use for their continuation of subsistence. And I think you will keep hearing that as the time goes by. But I wanted to ask Victor as to why you were agreeing to a set number of harvesting of caribou. I wanted to ask you, you know, why you wanted to agree to a set number.
Well, in order, for our people to become equal, as I mentioned earlier, we have status non-status. Our elders tell us that they want all the people included in the settlement. They want all the people to become equal. Presently, we do have the status Indian people that have the have the right to hunt for food on all unoccupied Crown land. In terms of the agreement as to why a set number is in place, the government of Yukon estimated that there was approximately 25,000 moose in the Yukon. The harvest level of that is about 10%, 2,500 animals, of which 50% of that would be given to our people. This is guaranteed. If the moose population increases in the future, then our quota would also be increased substantially. Keeping in mind, too, that we have approximately 6,000 people enrolled under our settlement, women and children, and we did calculations as to what that take was before we arrived at that number, and we thought that the 1,250 moose was adequate to protect our interests, to maintain that level for the future, and that's one of the reasons why we accepted that. And also, as part of that deal, we had 50% control on the management board. That board would recommend to the minister as to what those allowable harvests are, and the communities themselves would allocate to the people in the communities through the chief and council who gets the tags. And what a number of communities are saying is that that subsistence should be allowed to continue for the old people, and for people that maintain that activity throughout the year should also be given preference or priority on them.
Weaver Ivanoff, and then Dolly, and then.
I was interested in the commercial and the subsistence fishing coming from a fishing village myself. You mentioned that you have commercial fishing rights given to residents in the area. Are they limited only to the entry permit holders, the fishing permit holders, or is that allowed to all the residents? And number two is, if you're a commercial fisherman, are you still allowed also to subsistence fish? Are there any limitations?
We have, under the fishing agreement, we break it into four different areas. Subsistence is the first priority, domestic fishing, which applies to non-Indian people, sport fishing, and commercial fishing. I would think, to answer your last question, commercial fishing doesn't mean subsistence fishing. It's one or the other. In terms of the allocation, we are guaranteed in the future 25% of the commercial license that are issued. Now, for instance, in salmon, most of the commercial fishing takes place from Dawson City north to the border of Alaska. That's where the fishing for salmon takes place. There is, the fisheries issues so many licenses. There are going to be measures taken to allow for Indian people to increase their participation in the commercial fishing in that area. In terms of the coarse fish or the freshwater fish, the commercial aspects would be increased depending again on conservation.
Dolly Garcia.
In looking at it's the Yukon Territory that manages the fish and wildlife resources. Is that also true in the Northwest Territory?
That's right.
So they're both managed by the territorial as opposed to the Canadian government as a whole.
That's
the federal.
Right.
Okay. I wonder if there is concern by the people in the area that the subsistence harvest levels could be drastically changed in the future based on ultra-conservative resource interests. What I'm getting at is, could the harvest levels potentially be reduced for the sake of the resource? That seems to be a problem in Alaska, that our harvest levels are subject to ultra-conservative resource interests to a degree that we don't agree that the harvest levels should be as low as they are. Is that a concern of your people?
It is a concern. There's no question about that. Generally, the focus of resource development has been in the interest of the non-renewable resource area. And generally what happens is that the renewable resources suffer from that. Therefore, there's a real, it affects our people in terms of subsistence requirements there. And there's pressures by the managers to cut back in that area. But those kind of things would have to be considered in the future. If development is going to take place in a certain area, it would have to be subject to a very strict environmental screening process, taking consideration our interest in hunting, fishing, and trapping, and the social, economic, and the political structures of our people in reference to that project. So I guess through that process, it would be, the project would be evaluated, first of all, whether it's in that community's interest to go ahead with that project, whether it's going to benefit the community, the impacts on the livelihood towards subsistence would have to be weighed, and proper measures or mitigative measures would have to be considered if a project is allowed to go ahead. For instance, there is a proposal in the north slope of the Yukon to develop a rock quarry.